Your child's behavior is not meant to be controlled or mitigated or suppressed. It's meant to be understood, because when you understand what's under it, you're able to support them with ways to communicate those feelings.
83% of Americans identify as not very happy, which can hold you back and negatively affect your relationships and your business. On this podcast, we discuss the proven steps to happiness so you can restore balance and rekindle your joy.
Welcome everyone to another edition of How to Be Happier for Entrepreneurs. Like them all, this is going to be really, really cool, but this is extra special. We're going to talk about parenting to repurpose and how transforming your parenting can actually revolutionize your happiness. And we're going to talk with an expert on that, Cassidy. How are you, Cassidy?
Hello. I'm so good. Thank you for asking. How are you?
I'm great as well. Actually, I'm awesome. I'm awesome as well. So let's jump right in. We'd like to get right to the meat in this podcast. So you've mentioned, we chatted offline, that the best way to parent your child is to actually reparent yourself. Could you elaborate on what this pathway to happiness looks like for families?
Yeah, absolutely. So basically, our experiences from our own childhood influence how we perceive and respond to a child's behavior, and whether that's good or bad in your interpretation. And our self-talk actually comes from the way our parents spoke to us during those challenging times. And so it really paves the path for how we speak to ourselves, how we speak to our children. And I think that the biggest key as a parent in reparenting yourself as you parent is having that self-awareness and really understanding in the moments, like when you get triggered, knowing that that's your trigger and that's your work to do, and being the model of co-regulation, because your kids will learn so much more from you as a model, who you're being, versus anything that you say. And so just like really understanding, like striving for perfection will actually have you miss an opportunity to grow as a parent, because you don't become a parent and then you're perfect, right? You're always on that path of growth and development. And honestly, everyone has needs that weren't met as kids. And so identifying those as they come up for you as a parent and pouring into those, meeting those needs so that you can be in your highest self to truly serve the needs of your kids, if that makes sense.
Love it. I mean, you just said so many great things that we got to unpack here. So I've never heard that before. Our self-talk is how our parents spoke to us. Freaking like drop the mic moment right there. I'm going to use Ram Dass, one of the greatest spiritual leaders, I think, of all time. Put him in the top 50 at least. He said our ego is our parents.
Mm-hmm.
It's just said another way, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's anything that you label your kid will become the way that they label themselves, and it will become their own self-identification, really. And so it's really important to be super intentional with the words that you use with your kids.
Yeah, pretty amazing stuff. So kids do things. Kids generally misbehave because they lack connection with a parent, right? So they're just trying to get connection. And then us parents oftentimes react in a way that our parents probably responded. And that is to shut down their feelings or say, stop acting that way. But all they really want is love, right? So the child is doing age-appropriate stuff for the most part. Why does the parent need to get mad at all? Why does the parent get mad?
Why does the parent get mad? Well, I think there are a lot of explanations to that question, but it all comes down to a parent's also ability to regulate their own nervous system, their own self, their ability to be at baseline, to be neutral. The work that I do with parents is primarily on being able to be responsible for the triggers and the things that the stories that they make up in those high intensity moments when their kids are having behaviors, because the trigger has nothing to do with the kids. It actually has everything to do with some pain point that maybe in your past you have not healed from. And this is an opportunity versus an obstacle, right? Your kid isn't an obstacle. They're just presenting an opportunity for you to heal in some way.
Did you hear that? The trigger isn't the actual child. It's something inside of you that if you're 40 could have happened 35 years ago, but your subconscious mind actually goes in this fight or flight and it goes back and grabs that because it thinks it's in a survival state. If you're in fight or flight, you're in survival, even if your kids are doing it. But what you're saying, Cassidy, is exactly the same things that can apply to any relationship, right? An intimate relationship or a business relationship. The trigger isn't the actual person and what they're doing, right?
Correct. The trigger is always the guide for growth.
The guide for growth. It shows us. It's our internal alarm system. Just like when we have a temperature, it's like saying, hey, something's wrong. When you're triggered from anything, whether it's your child or the weather or whatever, right? That's your body saying, hey, you need to do some work. Do you find, because I see this repeatedly with my clients, and I probably did it, I'm sure I did it as a parent, that we repeat the same thing. So I'm dealing with clients now who have an issue because their parents were always gone working. And as a six-year-old, you can't say, oh, my mom and dad are gone because they're providing for the family. No, it doesn't work that way. Mom and dad are gone because probably something's wrong with me, right? So this is why my clients come to me with the issues. And then I ask them, are you doing the same thing? I was like, do you work a lot? Yeah. How do you think that's making your child feel? Oh my gosh, the same exact way it made me feel. And this is why I had to reach out to you for help. Do you see that a lot?
I do. It's really a beautiful thing when a parent understands that they actually are the source of the climate of their home. Right. And so any inner turmoil or stress or triggers that they're experiencing are amplified by kids because that's what kids do. They just make things bigger. They're the fullest expression of life. So, yeah.
So many families struggle with children's behavioral issues, which affects, as you just said, the overall like emotional atmosphere at home and in their life. Right. What's the first thing an overwhelmed parent should do?
Oof. Well, this is every parent I work with. There's many things. First thing, just breathe, take a breath, and just identify that you are at odds with your child. The fact of the matter is that you have somehow ended up on opposing teams. And at that point, it is your responsibility to regulate yourself. Because if you're dysregulated, if you're escalated, there's no way you're going to be able to soothe or calm or support your child. So Dr. Becky Kennedy, she's an incredible therapist who works with families. She talks about everyone is inherently good inside. And so in that breath, if you remind yourself, my child is good inside, I am good inside, and I get to support them in accessing their good. And I have to access my good first. So finding ways to signal to your body that you're safe, because I know that we'll talk about this a little bit, but for me, I grew up in a very unsafe environment. So my instinct is I'm unsafe. And so really finding those supports, whether it's grounding or rocking or breathing or anchoring, to take yourself out of fight or flight, because that's really what's happening when a parent is overwhelmed. The overwhelm is all what's happening internally. Because once you are able to do that, then you can investigate. Because behavior is, I like to think of it as clues, okay? They're clues that your child is giving you to indicate that there is a need that they are unable to communicate in any other way. So doing your investigation as a parent is exploring those internal needs, internal experience that they're having. There's a lot of stuff under the iceberg. The tip of the iceberg is the behavior. Underneath it, there's a lot of things that are happening, and your child's behavior is not meant to be controlled or mitigated or suppressed. It's meant to be understood, because when you understand what's under it, you're able to support them with ways to communicate those feelings and honestly start supporting them with the ability to understand what's happening in their body, which a lot of our grown-ups in this world don't even understand how to do. So you're setting them up for life with regulation and coping skills to really understand what led to that eruption, but it all started on the inside. And so obviously that's not instant because it takes a lot of practice. But like you mentioned, all your kids want is connection and unconditional love. And honestly, that's probably all you wanted as a kid, and maybe you didn't get it. And so I think that a lot of parents struggle with that as well.
Great stuff. So we're not going to have time to go over this today, but I created a tool that can help with this very thing that I call the Joy Regenerator, which took me 47 years to figure out what was going on inside of my body and my mind and how to process it. And one of the greatest gifts I'm giving my children now is to teach them how to process their emotions. So again, don't want to take away from Cassidy because she has such amazing information. But if you go to bradchandler.com/joy and download the Joy Regenerator, you'll get an email with a video that explains how exactly you do this. And this one tool can literally transform your relationship with your kids and your intimate relationship. So one of the things that struck me, Cassidy, when we talked before, because when clients come to me and they're like, my child has behavioral issues, can you work with them? I always go to the parent because that's why they have most likely, probably 98% of the time, they have the behavioral issues is because of the child, right? Or because of the parent, sorry. I know my two kids had anxiety and it was a direct result of myself and their mother. And you said something that was really different. You said that you're able to work with children and help them without working with their parents. Did I hear that right? And if so, can you speak a little bit more about that?
So in my work with families, I offer multiple different ways of working with me. All of them will involve working with the parents, but I also add the option to work with the child, given all of my experience working with kids. But it's always going to be in partnership with the parents because parents are the biggest teacher a kid will ever have. I don't care how many amazing teachers you had, you are shaped by your parents. So having the parents involved is really, really important.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
So you mentioned your childhood. It was unpredictable. It was unsafe. And since then, you've devoted your life to helping kids who need extra care. Tell us about your personal story and how it shaped this unique approach to finding family happiness.
Yeah, I love it. I love that I'm able to talk about my story now in such an empowering way because it really feels like a paint-to-purpose kind of scenario. And when I was a kid, it was really chaotic. I remember it being loud all the time. It was really unpredictable. I felt unsafe mainly because my parents were just, they did their best. I know they did their best. They all do. But there was just so much stress and pain and hurt. And they were arguing all the time. And it was just constant. It was like a war zone, right? And so I grew up in that panic. Like I felt like, and I did this work as an adult, realizing that I was living in constant fight or flight. So I was just always hypervigilant and ensuring that, you know, I didn't rock the boat, I didn't poke the bear, which had me end up as a big people pleaser as an adult. But I think that as an adult, I've always known that I get to be an advocate for kids because I didn't have one. And I started working with special education because it was a very vulnerable group of kids. And I was faced with a lot of behaviors. And I was also interesting to hear the way that people talked about behaviors, society, other teachers. And at the end of the day, I just saw my kids and I just saw behind the behavior was a kid, just a typical kid, just like everyone else who didn't have the tools to communicate, who didn't have the cognitive skills to process those emotions. And so I just really started working with parents through that to support them at home. And at the same time, I was diving into personal development and emotional intelligence. And I was like, why aren't we teaching this to families and to kids? This is so missing, like from all curriculum everywhere. Unless you seek it out, because I had to do so much healing to rewire my brain to understand that danger was not omnipresent. It wasn't just looming over me all the time. And I'm like, wow, how many people have spent so much of their adult life healing from their childhood? And if I can support families in creating an environment that is harmonious and connected and loving and safe, like how much energy that would save those kids when they grow up in being resilient and responsible and powerful. And so it really has been just the most fulfilling thing I could be doing to serve my inner child, to serve my purpose, and to serve families at large.
I love it. That's so awesome. So you said that you were able to see the kid behind the behavior, right? What was the one thing that kid wanted more than anything?
Acceptance. Because I worked with kids that were labeled as unteachable. I actually got that on an IEP once. This kid is unteachable. And wow. It just rocked me because I'm like, you're a teacher. That's your job. Right. And the more they are labeled with the inability to connect, the inability to do, that's all they're receiving. Right. That's all they're receiving is the suppression, the rejection. And of course, they're going to lash out even more. They're angry. They're hurt. And really creating an environment where I met them where they are and loved them where they are, it let all those walls come down. Like I potty trained a 7-year-old, you know, it was like the first time their parents were like, wow, somebody gets her and they want her to win. So it was a really, really powerful time in my life for sure. And it gave me a lot of perspective.
So you initially said acceptance and then you threw in love. That's what I was thinking, love. That child, all they want is love. It's the same thing that adults want, right? They want to be loved. And as a child can't give himself love. It's impossible. They need an adult or they would die. As an adult, though, you don't need another adult to give you love. You get the love from yourself. And when you can find that love inside yourself, because it's there, then you can start parenting the child, your child, to a point where they are feeling safe. Because if that child grows up not feeling safe, and so many people do, how does it manifest, Cassidy, in adults? Like you mentioned it, you were in constant fight or flight. How does that manifest? How does being in constant fight or flight did it in your life?
Yeah, I struggled to maintain relationships because I felt unworthy of love. I felt unworthy of real connection, true connection. I felt unworthy of being seen. There was a big fear that I would be abandoned or not enough if I was actually fully exposed. I dated all the wrong guys. I hung out with all the wrong people. But it's like, it was just a reflection of how I felt about myself. The inner talk that I absorbed from my upbringing. And so it took a lot of work, a lot of anxiety and working through all of those fears that really just had me feel so small. It was like I was in an adult body, but I felt like still that little girl that just wanted love. And like you said, unconditional love at that. So yeah, it took a lot of energy and work and years and tears to break free of that. And so I think that giving parents the tools to support themselves with that work so that they can create a safe container for their kids to grow up is probably the most important job in the world.
I agree. It's the greatest gift that you can give your child is to break this multi-generational curse that most of us are involved in. And there's only one way to do that. You teach your kid how to love themselves unconditionally. And how in the world can you teach them to love themselves unconditionally if you don't love yourself unconditionally? You can't, right?
Right.
So, wow, good stuff. Yeah, I heard a lot of myself when you were just describing that. One thing that I see with a lot of my clients are racing mind, anxiety. Mm-hmm. If you have anxiety, if you have a racing mind, if you're constantly distracting yourself with work or substances or sex or shopping or whatever, there's a good chance that you didn't have a safe childhood. And if you want to figure out quickly if you have a safe childhood, you can actually just look at, are your relationships bad? Are you in constant state of anxiety? You can ask yourself a simple question though too. Did I have someone as a child that I felt completely safe to go speak with about anything, any emotion, or whether I was being bullied or teased at school? If the answer is no, I had no one. I can't tell you how many clients I've heard, yeah, I was bullied at school or this happened to me. Who'd you tell? And they sit there for a second. They're like, nobody. I didn't tell anybody. Is it the kid's fault they didn't tell anybody? No. I don't like the word fault. Is it the cause of the child? No, it's the parents didn't create an environment of safety so that child could come to them. And again, not your fault either as a parent. This is all from childhood programming. Until you do the work, you are just still a six-year-old. So your six-year-old self is fighting with your six-year-old child. When you're fighting with your spouse, it's your six-year-old self fighting your six-year-old spouse. And once you get awareness of that, oh man, things change. Because I know you're in a relationship, I am too. And I mean, is it night and day difference from old relationships or what?
Oh, absolutely. Especially having a partner who has done the work on his own 6-year old as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you want to fix or heal your relationship, it's never about the actual relationship. It's the relationship that you have with yourself. That's the problem. So if you want to fix your marriage, just heal yourself. Heal yourself. So we touched on this a little bit, but you mentioned that children mirror back the part of us that we haven't yet healed, right? How can understanding this principle help parents in both their personal and actually their business lives?
Well, it's interesting that we were just talking about this because you said being in relationships in general will always trigger a part of you that didn't get a need met at some point in your life. Well, your kids are miniature versions of you. So they will inherently trigger parts of you that you have abandoned from that time in your life. But the cool thing is your kids are actually your guide back to what actually matters, because kids are the fullest expression of life. So if you are lacking life in any area, it's going to flush that up. And more importantly, they remind us who we are at our core, who we've always been, and who we can be if we actually embodied our most authentic, fullest self. But of course, all of us as adults, we've encountered phases of life where we've dimmed our light, or we've shut off versions of ourselves based on our upbringing, based on the way we were parented. And so if you choose to see them this way, they can be the collaborator in your growth, in your journey, versus the antagonist. I work with a lot of parents that are like, why is my kid out to get me? And it's like, no, like they're actually here to support you in your journey, just as you are for them. I've worked with so many parents who use their child's behavior to bring awareness to their own triggers, right? So like, I'll speak to one that every parent has experienced: when your kid has a tantrum in a public place, right? The tantrum itself isn't wrong. The kid is experiencing a big feeling, but what is the story you're making up about it, right? There's like a fear of looking good, a fear of being a bad parent, a fear of not controlling your child, or whatever that is. And so if you choose to see your child as a mirror back to you with feedback of your gaps, your growth areas, the opportunities to heal, it could really serve in paving a path of harmony and healing.
Yeah. Gabor says that oftentimes good kids don't throw tantrums, but what they really hear is bad kids or kids that throw tantrums don't get loved. And so what do? They shut down their authenticity and they stop being who they are because they've got to keep that attachment, where if they didn't have the attachment, they're going to die as children, right? Cassidy, why do we abandon parts? Why do we shut down parts of ourselves?
I can speak to kids. So kids are going to amplify the parts of themselves that are celebrated by their parents, that are honored and acknowledged and loved, and they will actually shut off completely the parts that are harshly criticized or punished. And sometimes, because a kid doesn't know what about them is being punished, a lot of the time when they're being punished, they will intrinsically think that they are bad. And so again, that's where the self-talk starts, the negative self-talk, that criticism of, oh, I can't do that. I can't be too much. I'll get yelled at. I can't fully express myself because that's wrong. And that carries into adulthood, right? That's why you have so many people that are just so afraid to use their voice or be themselves because of the fear that whatever fear was instilled in them, but it's parts of themselves that they've shut off because they were made wrong, whether intentionally or unintentionally.
Yeah, being childish takes away from the universe. Being childlike adds to the universe. We as adults have a need to play. We are all 6-year-olds inside of adult bodies. And so if we're truly the 6-year-old inside of adult body, we need to act like a child in certain ways, right? And that's through play and laughter and fun and exploring and being curious. Like being curious, like that's something no one can ever take from you. The more curious you can be and the less judgment and ego you have, oh man, it's good. Just always be curious. Why am I feeling this way? Why did my child just trigger me? Why am I drinking 3 glasses of wine? Why didn't I go to the gym today? Why is my business partner or my employee not doing a good job? Rather than judging, just be curious.
Yeah, not from a place of blame or shame or guilt, but truly just to ask those questions, because you'll get under the surface, just like we're asking parents to do with their kids, you get under the surface of the behavior itself and you find a space that you maybe need to heal or work through.
Do you do your work in person or is it virtual?
I do both. I offer both. So I am located in Austin, Texas. So I work with clients in home here, but I do offer virtual services as well.
So seeing that you do in-home support, you've witnessed a lot of child-parent interactions firsthand. Can you share a transformative client story that kind of exemplifies the power of the reparenting we've been talking about?
Yeah, absolutely. So quite recently, actually, I was consulting with a family who their child just, it seemingly overnight, started to develop these big behaviors that were undesirable, of course. There was the obvious not listening, the hitting, the pushing, and they were just very much not characteristic of this child. And so I sat with them and we dissected the behavior itself, but we also dove into what the parent's interpretation of the behavior was. Because there's the behavior in objective terms, and then there's the interpretation of the behavior as a parent, right? And so it's very interesting to experience that dissonance, because we look at the timeline and there had been so many changes that had taken place in this kid's life over the span of the last 2 years, which is half his life if he's four. And so he started to experience all of these emotions without the tools to communicate that, get those needs met, to ask for attention and affection and just some freaking stability, and working with the parents on, you know, that fear of being a bad parent, the fear of getting it wrong, which, P.S., you cannot parent right. There's no right. And really training him to start acknowledging and validating those uncomfortable feelings, instilling communication supports that everyone was using in all areas of his life, to continue identifying and sharing those big feelings and getting those needs met in healthy ways. And seemingly overnight, like it's only been, I think, a couple months, this kid is sharing his emotions, which at four is a big freaking deal, because we have 40-year-olds that still are struggling with that. He's finding tools to cope with those emotions and he's asking for support. Parents are celebrating him, creating space and time for all of the growth that they've created for themselves, that he's created. And you walk into the home and the entire energy, climate, temperature of the home is different. And it's warm and it's inviting and it's harmonious, which is why my program is called Harmony at Home.
Oh, sweet. Yeah. So if you guys are struggling with child's behavior, your children's behavior, and you've tried things, there is a better way. So you mentioned behavior versus interpretation. Isn't that kind of the crux of like all trauma? No, Gabor, Dr. Gabor Mate says the bad thing that happened to you as a child isn't the actual trauma. That's a traumatic event. The trauma is the interpretation and the meaning that you placed on that, right?
Absolutely. I've heard it said, yeah, trauma doesn't happen to you. It's what happens inside of you as a result of the event. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So if you're a parent sitting there thinking like, huh, I wonder if I have some of these programming issues, we kind of talked about how you can figure that out. I also developed this 12-question, 3-minute quiz at bradchandler.com/quiz. Go take it. And if you score negative lack of self-love or mild self-love, I promise you, as good of a parent as you think you are, you're definitely affecting your kids negatively to some degree. Again, not your fault, but with this quiz, you'll have awareness. So, Cassie, such amazing information that you've shared with us. How can people reach you if they want to get more information or actually work with you?
Yes. So I am actually launching the newest wave of my Harmony at Home one-on-one coaching program, where I support parents in taking a chaotic environment and transforming it into calm, connected, harmonious. But they can find me on Instagram at It's Cassidy Callen. They can also email hello at Cassidy Callen. But right now, those are the two biggest ways to get a hold of me.
And that's CassidyCallan.
Yes, correct.
So guys, if you like this show, I want to reach 1 million people. I want to give 1 million people this gift of what I've gotten in my life, this gift of self-love and how it's radically changed my life. So if you'd help by sharing this message, liking it, doing a review, I'd really appreciate it. Cassidy, thank you so much for being a part of this amazing episode.
Thank you so much for having me. This was such a pleasure.
And that concludes another episode of How to Be Happier. And remember, love heals all. Bye now.
Hit subscribe if you don't want to miss out on more life-changing content. And if you're struggling, you don't have to. Go to bradchandler.com/contact. There, you can join the Facebook community of like-minded entrepreneurs, and you'll see a button to schedule your freedom and happiness call. See you on the next episode.